should be like, so I hear you like ferrets. I have a ferret at my kitchen table. I have a ferret in me. I'm a ferret.
That sounds really bad. I currently have a ferret in me. You want to see it war dance?
So I guess we have our opening then.
Fantastic episode of Fangs and Fonts. It's me, Ocean Tigrox.
I'm Voice Spider.
I'm Yunara Chena.
I'm Roland Jovaic.
What a weird name.
I think you two are the only ones.
I have an actual last name for my character.
Ditto, I have an actual last name for my
Tigrox
character.
Tigrox technically good work. I don't know.
This be like, RSVD, when we get married, I'm not going to take your last name.
Why?
You don't want to be a Tigrox?
It's the same color.
Why not?
Cali Tyrox? Tigrox?
Cali Tigrox? That sounds like a sex move.
Excuse me, I have to...
No!
Anyways. I thought Ocean was too short. I don't know.
So, this time around, we decided that we were going to take a different approach to this episode and just kind of do a grab bag of general questions and comments and things to rant about, because there's a lot of stuff that we don't talk about that's small enough to warrant kind of throwing a bunch of them into a pot and making a podcast out of it.
Just little bits, simple questions.
Are we stirring the pot, so to speak?
Always.
We always stir the pot.
We're upstarts, remember?
If you don't stir the pot, it sticks to the edges.
Ew, and the bottom. Crusty.
Ugh. And I'm not scraping that off.
And you get burnt rice in the bottom of your pan and you can't clean it ever. One of my brother's friends failed at making KD.
What?
Like, he didn't put water in it.
He just...
What a fantastic question. Please tell me, how much description do you think is required in that story?
Fine. I'll shut up.
As you choke to death.
Less than not enough, or more than not enough, less than a shit ton.
Tell me, how creamy was that Kraft dinner? Was it bone dry? Do I need to know what the kitchen looked like? Do I need to know what model of oven?
Did you describe the process of cleaning the pot afterwards?
Do you have to world build around this, Katie?
Yeah. So for those of you that have included, we're going to talk about description. How much description is required in a story?
When it's too much, just too freaking much.
How much do you want to put in? It's my first question.
I know a good author that's, at the same time, wonderfully and terrible at doing the overkill for the description, and I'm going to butcher the last name, but it's Jean M. Owl. She does the People of the Plains, Kaylana the Cave Bear, the Mammoth Hunters. She does that whole series, and she just...
Too much or too little?
Some points it's great because her world building is wonderful, and she actually puts a lot of research into what she's writing about, but half the time her stories end up reading like a history paper, and I find myself going, okay, I really don't care at this, okay, no, I'm just gonna flip for dialogue.
Well, so let's take a very prime example here. Would you say that, is it J.R. Tolkien? Whatever Tolkien.
Tolkien?
I say
Tolkien.
Harry Potter, man. Magic is everywhere.
Yeah. So Tolkien, he is a wordy motherfucker. Would you say it's too much? No, he's talking about...
Oh, no, I'm dumb now. I'm thinking, Roland, bro, go ahead.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I've read The Hobbit. I haven't read any of the actual Lord of the Rings books, but
they're easier once you watch the movies.
Yeah.
Because he's a wordy motherfucker, and you need the pictures in your head to make the book just go, okay, I can deal with this.
Like, when you're talking about somebody that just wants to go through painstaking lengths to describe absolutely everything that's happening in a scene, Tolkien is very good at...
Killing you.
Dragging it out.
Expanding his world, so to speak.
The two examples I have...
are, my prime one is, of course, H.P. Lovecraft, who went both extremes, especially in relation to his creatures. When he first started off writing, everything was too horrible to explain. You got very little description, and that was it. Later on in his career, towards the end of it, he would sit there and put a stupid amount of detail into his creatures and describe what they look like, their tentacles and their teeth and blah, 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 blah. For me, the prime example of too much too much description and whatnot in a story, Moby Dick. Moby Dick is a giant story that essentially teaches you how to do whaling. Not really needed. That's where I kind of draw the line is, if it starts describing things that have no relation to the story and kind of just not really needed, and most of it's world building, that might be too much.
So what stories do you guys feel then require more description? Like for me, for some reason, Slice of Life seems to use a lot of description, when it's odd since it's using concepts that we should be familiar with. But at the same sense, we're talking about fantasy and things like that, where you're going to have mythical creatures that people might not be familiar with. Or sci-fi, I think, is another one where it's like, I would like a little more description in my sci-fi, because you are talking about anything in the futuristic tech could be so wide.
It depends on where you're writing to in those genres. I attended at Gen Con one year, an author's talk, and in it he was writing a story about X-Wings in the Star Wars universe. And he said, the first thing he does in it is his pilot walks up to his X-Wing, walks around it, and he describes the X-Wing. Because he's like, believe it or not, there are people who don't know what an X-Wing looks like, so you have to describe it. And at that point, it's kind of like, well, is that too much description? Because generally, anyone who's picked up a Star Wars book, especially in the middle of the entirety of all of the books, they're probably already going to know what an X-Wing looks like, so you don't really have to describe it.
I think it's probably a lot safer to err on the side of not describing enough than describing too much. Because a lot of stories have to sort of hinge on the fact that the reader's going to fill in the finer details. You can, like, so it's called the X-Wing. There are two things you can assume about this. It's in the shape of an X.
And it flies.
Or resembles an X in some way and has wings. The more you describe it flying through space, the more you understand it as a spaceship. And then as the story progresses, the details get filled in by how the characters interact with these objects. So you don't need to express it in words, you express it in actions.
I think one series or I'd like to see a little bit more description in would probably be Laurel K. Hamilton's Meredith Gentry series, the one with the urban fantasy and the fairies. Could just because I'm a sucker for world building when it comes to the fae, but like she starts doing a lot of description in, you know, in the Seelie and the Unseelie court, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, maybe it's just because I'm a little fanatical about the fae, but I would love to see more world building done in that instead of just your vague descriptions and your vaulted ceilings and the color of the floor. I mean, but then it gets into too much because she's writing from first-person point of view, and it's just too much for a character to describe as looking. Like, you don't walk into a mall and start taking apart everything, right? Much like our conversation about you don't look at someone and say, yeah, you're about 6'5", 200 pounds, and probably have a pant line. You know, your inseam's this, and, you know, like all that stupid description you have in most stories.
And because it's like, okay, Hamilton, your penis is about 9 inches long.
No, come on. She's not that bad in that series.
No, she's
You've
not.
You've got to admit, she's more more obsessed with killing people in that series. It's the werewolf series that it's the pop can penises that Wolfie Neal is so fan of. Yeah.
Yeah,
the Anita Blake series that it's all Wolfie Neal pieces.
No, because those are short and squat. They're
right.
Not long,
yeah,
and narrow.
The baseball bat.
Anyway, it also depends on what you're describing and how you're describing it. One of my favorite descriptions that just threw me for a loop was in Surviving the Theseus. They go to a giant vacation cruise starship called the Pyramid It is described as taking a pyramid, flipping it upside down, and chopping the point off. So at what point is that a pyramid?
That's not.
So it's kind of really having to watch what you're describing. Basically, because there's a lot that you have to...
I know, it's just a freaking rectangle.
No. It's a pyramid missing a pyramid.
It's a trapezoid?
It's a square.
Rhombus?
But yeah, you're right. It's a pyramid missing...
No, I think it's a trapezoid.
Yeah, I can't remember what the third dimension
is. I don't know.
Anyways,
I haven't done math in years.
But and it's
a simple way of describing it.
Yeah, but the ship itself was called the Pyramid.
Stargate.
But it depends on what you're describing. There's certain things that people like it already know. For example, especially in the furry fandom, a wolf walks up, a wolf. Immediately, there's an image for anyone in the furry fandom as to what they look like.
Gray, long snout, dog ears. We're done.
Yeah, and it's unless there's something unique about them, a wolf is all that's needed. A mouse. A
white wolf.
Yeah.
Ooh. A tone of fur color and their species.
And do they have head hair?
Oh, yeah.
Which may or may not be important.
Or the scars.
See, now that's something I see a lot more in art, but described a lot less in...
That also goes back to the, almost the pause debate. Like, do you call it hair? Is it head fur? Do you get bad when people say it's head fur?
Is it a mane? But then only lions have mane. But then you're going into the mange. I don't know. I think that's more just...
Pick one, keep it consistent.
But again, it's a description thing that, like, when it comes down to it, especially if it's a minor character and it's a wolf missing one eye, there's an image, you know? A muscular wolf missing one eye.
A muscular white wolf missing one eye.
I guess for myself, I like to have a little bit more on the less description just because I enjoy myself as a reader coming into that setting and filling it with my own imagination. In the same way that you would go read a book and then you watch the movie of it and you're like, oh, I didn't picture it like that at all.
Or their character voices, you're like, oh, I didn't think they'd sound like that at all.
Well, that guy didn't sound cool at all.
Don't fall into the Hunger Games trap.
What's that?
All of the disappointed people when they found out that the little girl was black. Even though she is described as having olive skin. It was amazing.
I did fall for that with, recently there's a new series on TV called Bitten from Kelly Armstrong's Women of the Underworld series.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped watching it after they killed off a main character that's played a part. And I'm like, done! Nope. But they just butchered some of the characters. And I'm like, this is nothing like I imagined it in the book.
But as, I shouldn't make this for all readers, but as myself as a reader, I know I like to bring myself in. And so... I'm trying to picture what details they have, but at the same time, I'm like, well, it feels like there's a mountain here. They didn't say there's a mountain, but I feel there's a mountain here. And that just suddenly I feel more in because I'm helping add to the picture.
True.
And like sometimes scenes require very heavy information or you really want to stress what this environment is or this person is.
Because horrors need that.
That leads back into the fact that the reader's just going to fill in most of the details anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether or not you prefer more description... Well, some people might be like, just, I want to know what this is like, but it's probably something that's a little more abstract than your usual item or whatever. So, unless something bears description, unless it is necessary... I think it's safer to err on the side of less because they're just going to fill in the details anyway.
You're just throwing in word count.
Exactly. And it's just, it comes down to, my writing especially, I've been accused of being very sparse, especially with character descriptions. And case in point, my Red Panda Raven. Girls in Taboo, Raven's only description being he has dark fur. It's like, really... Oh, and when he wore slacks, that was it. That was the only describers of him. But that's the thing, is it wasn't really there for the reader to... Like, the reader can piece it together. He can look whatever the reader wants, as long as they stick with his species and whatnot. Mm. And that's generally what it is if it's not going to play an important part in your story at any point, it may not really be needed unless it's just flavor text.
Yeah, I guess two questions you can ask yourself, or even your beta readers, is... what do you picture when you read this? Do I see what I'm trying to describe? And is it dragging on too long? all this description. There has to be a point where your plot does actually move. Mm-hmm. But I think it's mostly a style. If you feel that's where you like to go and you want to describe it, go for it. You know,
there are always going to be those that, especially in fantasy and science fiction, who want to know all the painful details about every alien society you've come across.
That's what you're saying. What hard science fiction?
Hard science fiction is like that, where it's like, I want to know how the warp drive works. Here's 20 pages detailing how it works.
I think Game of Thrones, I heard, is like that, where they have like the first three chapters or something is just talking all about the hierarchy, and then it's like, okay, now that you know that, let's go to the story.
Yeah, you maybe even told that, but good luck retaining it.
Books like that tend to drive me away.
I'm with Roland.
I don't like having to slug through pages and chapters of exposition just to get to the meat of your story. There's a certain amount of leeway I'll give to something like that, but, I mean, I'm pretty sure I've made it known to you that I don't like exposition.
Was it you who just started reading Ringworld, or someone I was talking to, and they were showing me their book in the beginning had the glossary, which, you know, I've seen in sci-fi, and it's nice to have that there, but even if they put it before what I'm about to read, I'm still going to be flipping back on what? Okay.
See, one of the nice
writers of Pern does that. When Anne McCaffrey was
right,
I used to love using the glossary all the time.
I started reading a 40K series about a commissar, not Gaunt's Ghosts, it's the Kane series. And the one thing that they do, and I don't see it in novels all that often, is actually the first time I've ever seen it, is footnotes. And it's just because it's a guy going over this story and he's adding his own comments as footnotes, basically kind of correcting what's going on at the time and what may or may not have been missed. And as much of a typesetter's nightmare as it is, it actually works really well so that I'm not flipping to the friggin' ass end of the book going, okay, well, what's this term that no one seems to explain? What's this thing that they're talking about?
They do that in the Gore series. I spend half the time of the Gore series going, what the hell is that word?
Yeah.
What phrase is that? Where's the freaking glossary in this thing? This is an 80s book. Come on.
Are we good?
We're good.
Okay.
What?
That's the end of that topic.
Are we done with this topic?
Oh. Yeah, I guess.
horse sufficiently beaten.
It's only kind of twisty.
This is short topics for a reason, so I'm sure we could drone on.
Next.
Long story short is that do it or don't.
Personal preference.
It is personal preference.
And
if you enjoy a certain style when you read a book, that's probably going to end up being the style that you write.
Write the book that you want to read because that's your demographic.
And I would say don't be wordy just to take up word count because it's going to show.
Oh, geez, no, I hate that.
Yeah, it's going to show.
Listen to your beta readers. If they feel like this is droning on, then maybe it's time to cut back.
To multiple beta readers.
Yes. if they're going, I have no idea what this actually is going on, or how did this come, or how did this show up, maybe you need more description.
Okay.
That's dusting hands, not plotter.
Next question. Why write furry? How furry are you, and how does it affect your writing?
Pretty and a lot. I'm a pretty furry, and I write a lot of furry.
He's very pretty.
I found out when I got into the fandom back in about 1994 that I was heavy into it. And then I left shortly, and I came back, and I was even more into it. But as I've gotten older and have been in the fandom longer, I find myself more kind of retreating, and I'm more selective as to what I'm doing.
That's because you're a hermit fox.
No, it's I don't go on to FA and sit there and go.
You don't
through.
Come hang out anymore, dude. You used to be cool. What happened?
Became a writer.
You were a writer before I knew you.
That's true. But going through like FA or other art sites and just
you settled down.
Yeah,
don't blame me for this shit.
That's true.
Totally, yeah.
Screw you, hippie.
Sorry, continue.
But it's a case of I didn't care about the porn on FA anymore, which is my prime reason.
Let him answer the question.
This is a short topic week.
I'm allowed to interrupt.
But it's just a case of like I got tired of the porn. I got tired of a lot of the extra drama stuff that I used to get pulled into. And it was just, I'm there to look at art when I log on. I'm there to talk to people that I'm friends with and that I've met and I know or I've talked to online, and just that's it. I'm not going to sit there and go run around and talk to thousands of strangers.
You heard it here first. The erotica writer is tired of porn.
So what does that have to do with why write furry?
I write furry because I enjoy writing furry and because I want to see a higher end of product within the furry fandom writing thing. If I can either help bring that about or inspire others to create high-end furry material, that would be great. Next.
I write furry because I like it. I mean, it's some, you got to admit, it's a challenge to write some days. You take an ad, just a general scene, and make it furry. Well, we've had this discussion. What makes something furry? That starts changing, you know, the air smells different, the air feels different, the fur, the whiskers, the ears twitching, your tail twitching, you know. It's a challenge to write furry, and I've been a furry since I was 13 years old. I mean, it's the oldest form of art that I know at this point. And it's just kind of close, you know, kind of close to here for me.
I don't consider myself all that furry. I like the furry fandom, and that's about the gist of it. As for how it affects my writing, as somebody who does identify with the furry fandom, I feel it adds sort of another layer of fantasy on top of what I'm already writing. So I've also done it for so long that it's just second nature to me now. I mean, thinking about writing a story that does not contain some form of anthropomorphic furry character seems foreign. So I do it because it's what I know, and I do what I know because I like to. So that's about it.
Oh, myself. I enjoy being the purple Tigrox that runs around doing weird things and says stupid things and promoting Tigrox knowledge and that. So I like the fandom, but it wasn't until just recently that it's like, oh, I guess I could write furry fiction. I had always written, you know, human quote-unquote fiction. But it was kind of something different, and I read up on it, which everyone should do if they're planning to read this. Otherwise, you're not writing furry fiction, you're writing humans with fur fiction. But it's great to be a part of the community, because we are one of the very few communities out there that doesn't rely on other people's content to encourage our fandom. We create our own content.
Hell of a lot of created content.
People create their own personas. We have a furry fiction that there's nowhere else. That, like, we had Disney. That was about it, right? But like Voice said, I want to encourage this medium in the fandom. We can definitely raise the bar of excellence for what we have here. There's a lot of potential, and you know, it'd be great to see that go further and higher. Like myself personally, I write the least amount of erotica in this group. I don't write zero.
But see, and that's the thing, is for me, it's, I didn't
That's
go,
what you like writing, though. That's
I
that's
didn't
fine.
Plan to write erotica.
I don't either. It's just usually that's not the type of story I want to write. And for me to come up with an erotica story is a complete different mentality for the kind of stories I want to write and read. That's not to say I don't like erotica. It's not to say I don't write erotica. And it's not to say that I don't want to see more erotica. It's just, what I want to do is increase more of the non-erotica in the fandom, already feels saturated with it.
See, and my problem is I write erotica because I feel that the fandom is saturated with bad erotica.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Unrealistic, tacky, chachi, you name it. I read it and I get completely blown out of the book because it's like, that's fucking stupid.
You read it
and
you're
I'm
like,
done.
I could do this better.
Who hasn't done that? Who hasn't looked at an art form that they're part of and said, I could do that better? You know, I do that with my sculpting. I do that with my jewelry. Why can't I do that with my writing?
And the thing
unfortunately, it's erotic, but what can you do?
With the nature of the creativity within the fandom, unfortunately, writers in the fandom are a lesser species compared to the artists.
Yeah,
that is so another topic for another day.
We're a very visually oriented fandom.
Well, what was the point I came up with the other day? Look at people who can actually make a living doing full-time work in an area in the fandom. You've got artists, you've got some suit makers. How many writers do you know?
One.
Yeah, that's all I know.
And I don't think, and it's because I'm sure we're thinking of the same writer, but it's because he doesn't primarily focus on the furry fandom for his income either.
No, he's also doing other work.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure he's also got help.
No potential.
And his mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's it. You know.
I don't know a single actual self-sustained writer within the fandom
that is exclusively
from the fandom.
So yeah, right. Furry fandom is a very visually oriented, tactile fandom.
Which makes sense when, you know, we have fursonas and people want to express that and see that.
Exactly.
So, there you go. That's why we write furry. Now.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Okay,
moving on. Why does it sound like you're clapping? Really?
I am clapping.
Now it just sounds like you're trying to start a fire.
Oh, God.
Or masturbating.
Tonight on Sound Effects Theater.
Yeah. Brought to you by voice.
So, okay, that was question two. Question three, or topic three, rewriting your story.
Well,
how do you do it?
I like how you looked at me first, because I'm probably...
I know how many times you rewrite stories. This is slightly direct topic at you.
Yeah, in your existing Word document.
Yes. No, for those... History. For a good example of me rewriting stories...
You did. Oh, she just moved his chair.
Story
to
time.
Directly with... face voice.
Oh, man. O.M. Tarl.
OMT.
My cyberpunk submission for RF, I rewrote that story...
6 times?
4 or 5 times. Cthulhu Punk, I wrote at least 4 times. A steampunk Monster Hunter story, I wrote 9 times. Until I finally went back to a story I had written years ago and did that one.
Rewrote that
so,
one.
much to be said... Out of everyone at this table, I probably have rewritten my stories the most. And it's mostly just because I've picked up an idea that I started writing, my heart's not in it, I don't care about the characters or the theme, and I'm just like, screw it. So I generally, when I rewrite, I'll try taking the same story and taking another angle with it once or twice. If that doesn't work, I scrap it. So generally, it'll be this file name, version 1, 2, 3, and then that, you know, and then the completely new story for however long I want to play with that.
And I can't remember, were you more of a discovery writer?
I'm a discovery writer.
Okay, so like myself, I like to plot more, so I won't actually start writing until I feel I've got enough to go
plot.
With. Go?
Yeah.
What?
Plot.
Yeah, plot. It's what we writers do. So, yeah, I guess I see it differently that I don't rewrite as much as you because I do more pre-planning.
But and that's one of the things with being a planning writer versus a seat-of-your-pants writer is I'm trying to self.
You're just
going to
go, let's just do it and see where it goes. Well, I'm like, I don't know if I like this yet.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Actually, I'm somewhat curious. Do you think that being a seat-of-the-pants writer is really just an excuse for laziness of a lack of pre-preparation? And I say this being a discovery writer myself.
I don't know. I couldn't be a planning writer. I found that was so stifling in school when you had to do the whole web diagram, chart, flow, plot.
Oh, that's way too much plotting for me.
I couldn't do it.
I understand
like,
some people like
it.
As I mentioned in a previous podcast of ours, when I wrote my longer piece, my action novel, it was... I literally plotted out what was happening every... I think it was like 1,000 words. Ugh. And you know what? It helped. It helped significantly. I did not stall on that at all. I sat down. I knew what I was going to write. I knew where it was going to go. I would stop writing for the day and I would look at what I'm writing for the next day. And in the time between I stood up and I sat down again, my brain has processed all of what I'm supposed to be writing. And then it just went on like that. It was immensely helpful. And as a discovery writer, I sat down and said, holy crap, this is actually working. I love it.
Well, I've done stuff like that where it's like I get stuck and then I'll just be like, okay, I know what's going to happen. I just write like this action, this thing, And then I'll come back the next day and be like, okay, so this one sentence and expand it into what it should actually be.
There are some stories where I really do truly feel that planning out sort of everything that is to be done in the story is somewhat necessary, but to that same degree, I sometimes find myself getting way too into
planning,
world building, characters, and the phrase paralysis by analysis is fairly common in that sense.
Cool.
And I don't know, like, there are some cases where I think it could be detrimental, some cases where it's not. Did you have to do a lot of reworking or editing on that story that you put that work into?
Not really, because usually by the time I got it down, I knew what it was doing. And the problem with a lot of the rewriting where it's gone on for, like, over five times is I've usually, at that point, said, F this crap, set it aside, leave it for a day, and usually then a day or two later, I'll have that inspirational moment because I've set it on the back burner of my mind and my subconscious has worked on it, and then it comes forward usually when I'm walking or something, and it's like, especially when I'm walking home from work, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, if you did it this way, that might work, and then it's like, and then from there, it's that mini explosion of your story wrote itself from the time it took you to walk from the bus stop to home, which may be 15 minutes, and you've got your entire story, and all you have to do is sit down and write it.
And that's why I don't completely plot anything out. I generally have my, like, I want this character to do this sometime in the story, and I want this to happen there, and then between that, I'm just like, I'm not sure how I'm going to get there. But then I'll have those things where I'm just like, oh, how could this work? And you're just like, sweet, write that down now. But when writing, have you ever just done a whole story and you're looking at it and you're just not too happy with it, but you notice it's one big scene? Do you ever think about just rewriting the scene? Or other than rewriting the story, what other large revisions would you do?
I find it really difficult to go back in and rewrite one scene of my story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know if it's because in my mind it's set. I'll tweak little things about it, but rewriting the entire scene, I feel it's kind of like transplanting an organ. It's not the original organ that was there. It's something else you've put in there, and it will never, despite the fact that everyone else can read it and it may work, it will never mesh to myself. It'll just
be
this Frankenstein
piece. You don't think
it'll
flow, so
you just... Surgeons, take note. You can only replace both livers at a time.
You have to replace the whole circulatory system if you want that heart out.
So when it comes to stories that require, say, maybe the least or the most amount of writing, personally I find that the stories that come most fluently require the least amount of writing. Is there a particular trend that anybody else notices when it comes to stories that need more tender, loving care than others?
For rewriting?
Yeah, like for rewriting stories, for editing, for... Like, there are some stories where there is no saving them.
I'm feeling like that right now with one of my
like
stories.
I can't even rewrite it on the same basis that the idea is so fundamentally flawed.
See, since I'm the least discovery writer and more plotting, my way for that generally isn't, I'm not going to rewrite it. I get to a part in the story and I'm just like, I don't think this is going anywhere. And so I don't actually get to finish it first before I get to rewrite it or think about rewriting it.
Rewriting.
I will go hunt wabbits now. And we all shrug. And I spittle. I'm sorry.
I myself am having problems with writing because I am primarily a discovery writer. But if I have to... I will write down, you know, this is where I start, this is where I end, what do I need to fill it, and then from then I just kind of, I've got my major 3 to 4 points, you know, beginning, end, two center bits to make everything flow, and then at that point I just kind of discovery write how to put it all together. But right now I'm trying to rewrite a story that I had done 2010?
I think so.
And... I don't even know where to start. At this point, I've basically kind of dropped it in poor voice's lap and said, edit this! Maybe I can work backwards from this, because it's...
That reminds me. I have a story to do that with you.
It's old, right? You know, my writing's changed. This is one of the first stories I wrote and got... I actually forgot that I had been rejected on this story. This was one of my first submissions. I completely forgot that I wrote it, forgot that I... See, there's the whole rejection thing. I forgot.
And it's something so old that, like you
but
said, you've changed so much that you're
I'm
like...
I'm not sure where to start with this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. You just
Yeah, probably.
So is there real any answer to this, or is it?
It's discovery.
It all comes down to your method.
I think it's a discovery.
If you feel you can transplant a scene out of it, do it. Oh, wait, that was one question that we didn't answer. When you rewrite a story, do you look at the old one and try to look at, like, okay, well, this was working, this wasn't, and rewrite it? Or do you just go, screw it, toss it, start over again?
I look at it a couple times. If it doesn't work, then I toss it completely.
I try to discover what parts of it worked best and keep those parts. But if I have to scrap it, I'll scrap it.
I mean, again, it's sort of like what I was saying about having ideas that are fundamentally flawed. In just about all case, if the story can be salvaged, it's salvaged from the original iteration. Otherwise, the idea is just gone completely. I think ultimately you eventually come to learn what stories are salvageable and which ones aren't.
So on the end of all of that, when do you give up on a story?
Wait, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well done. Dust our paws off. Okay, so.
After all of that, when do you give up on a story?
Yeah, how many times is a rewrite not going to save it? Or this is where I'm stuck at with my story right now.
I don't know. I'm still trying to salvage mine.
If I start getting angry and it's stopping all my other work, then I'll toss it. Or at least set it aside and work on something else, which usually means that it gets tossed because the deadline passes.
I've seen that.
I think the point at which you've re-edited your story or rewritten your story and it doesn't get any better than the last iteration is probably the time at which you should give it up. Because, I don't know, like I've said, I find that there are just some ideas that just do not get better with age. Some stories do not age well, and you should let them be.
Do you ever get a story that you hit writer's block so badly that you just go, it's not going to happen?
Yes.
Yep.
And then that due date comes, and you're just like, eh.
Yep.
And then you're just like, either never write it back or put it in the drawer and see if you can come back to it another time.
Exactly.
Yep.
So either the due date's passed and you really don't feel like finishing it right now.
If it's frustrated you that much and the due date passes, you probably won't care.
Yeah.
Or
you might resurrect the idea for a separate anthology, but...
And it really, either, or you never got to finish it, or you just get so stuck on it, or you did finish it, but you just can't seem to refine it to a level you're happy with. And I mean, like, acceptable, not perfect, because...
See, there's a joy.
Fuck it, ship it, forget it. I'm adding forget it to it now.
There's a joy in the writing world where you've got your unfinished but unpublished work folder, and you go into there and you open a story you maybe haven't touched in years, and you start reading and you go, oh my God, I remember this. And as you start reading it, your brain suddenly goes, oh, here's what you were missing. And then thus allows you to actually reuse it, turn it into something absolutely amazing, so on and so forth. Or in some cases, like one story I wrote, it was for non-furry fiction, and then I decided to submit it to a furry fiction anthology, and it turned out to be 1,000 times better as a furry story rather than a non-furry. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, I guess that was it.
You give up on a story when you have nothing left to contribute to it. That's about it.
Sounds like a lot of things you can do in life.
So, this one.
You want to explain this one for number five?
For number five, I got an email from a fellow writer in the Taboo anthology, Storm Kitty, who sent me this question/topic for us to discuss, and I'm just going to read the email here quickly. A possible discussion topic for FNF. Something I learned soon after I started writing is that it's surprisingly easy and a lot more common than you think for two or more people to independently come up with essentially the same idea, even though it seems like a very original and novel idea. Some years ago, I saw a top 10 list of science fiction story themes that are so common that they get dismissed virtually out of hand when they show up among submissions for science fiction anthologies and magazine. Unfortunately, I don't have a link or reference, but I remember thinking that some of those ideas sounded very clever and original. This kind of thinking can also lead to people accusing others of stealing their ideas or plagiarizing their work when nothing of the sort has occurred. A famous example of this revolved around the Darkover series by
Marion Zimmer Bradley.
There we go. In which she had encouraged fan fiction until a novel she was about to publish turned out to be similar to a fan's work, which she hadn't read. And the fan sued to be given co-author credit. The novel went unpublished and caused her to pull the plug on allowing any more fan fiction. That is Storm Kitty's email. Now, one of the things when we first started talking about topics for this podcast, one of the things that came up is it's all been done before. We've all seen the South Park episode
where Simpsons did it.
With the sheer amount of people writing in the world, and especially with self-pub and internet publishing now, especially in the erotic market, which recently took an extreme explosion of work, there will always be things that seem similar to another piece of work. It's guaranteed that that's going to happen. And unfortunately, that's just gonna, one of those things that's gonna happen as more and more people are self-publishing and whatnot. And then, thus as Storm Kitty says, we'll come across or come along the inevitable, well, you read my previous work, you clearly stole it, and now I'm going to pursue you after it, whether or not that's actually the case.
Intellectual property is a fickle bitch.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
We talked about this at Baltimore in the publishing. Who's the author that writes the Xander series, is it? And also does the Incarnations of Immortality? Piers Anthony.
I really love Piers Anthony.
Apparently, Piers Anthony does not read fan mail. Any fan mail that is sent, he has a group of people that read fan mail, and they go through it, and occasionally they're like, you can read this one. Because if someone mentions something, it is Xander series, right?
Xant series.
Because if someone says something in the Xant series, and he reads that letter, and it shows up in a book, someone can go, hey.
That's a good point, because the Xant series is
so
all-encompassing and out there, and just so full of the best puns and play on words, and it's fantastic to read. I can understand why he would not touch fan mail.
I forget what the technical legal term is for denial of knowledge or whatever.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, it gives him plausible deniability. Thank you. That he did not know their idea when he creates the book so that no one can go and go, I did that, you copied me.
Yeah.
So.
I think that's a terribly sad.
It's incredibly sad.
Yeah. It's a very sad reality because
into that position.
You know,
unless you're going to put some legal disclaimer that any fan mail you mail to me, and if it shows something and it shows in a book.
Well, the whole
but there's still some way around it.
Intellectual properties has forced us to tiptoe around so many issues, and like people suing an author for having a work that is similar to X work, or people going, "I thought of that." You know, I should have gotten that credit kind of thing. And it destroys what originality people can come up with, because any resemblance that it shares with something else that is out in the public domain or otherwise, that can be misconstrued.
I was talking about this topic at work to my coworker. And take, for example, Smashwords. The big thing, billionaires. How many individually unique pieces can you write about millionaire sex, especially when the millionaire is generally a dude? How much can you come up with that's,
and yet you search it and
it's like, for example, I was talking to a few furry writers and looking at stuff. Look at the amount of weird shit that you have on Smashwords, where it's like raped by dinosaurs or raped by gangbang wolfman sex.
Welcome to the internet.
But at the same point, it's how many stories about my werewolf lover can you write that are individualistically you know, not, different.
Not a rose, intellectual property. A rose by any other name is still a fucking rose. So...
what do you do?
Yeah, like, if... And that's the problem. That.
And I mean, and here's and a prime example that happened in the furry fandom. McGrath, is it? Furry writer wrote a book called Space Marine Something. Games Workshop has a trademark on Space Marine, and it launched a giant shitstorm as they basically tried to... They bullied it off of Amazon. It led to a whole bunch of stuff that happened that is actually quite amazing for the number of people who stood up for the furry author. But... And the thing is it's one of those cases where it's like, yes, Space Marine is not something that is distinctly unique to Games Workshop. Space Marines have existed for an extremely long time, starting with things like Starship Troopers, where it's a marine space.
It is literally a
description.
Marine who occupies the void of space.
Yeah.
It's a description, not a name.
There are so many things that shouldn't have trademarks like that.
Exactly.
So...
And I mean, and there's...
I think the important thing is don't be afraid that someone has written something you've already done. Don't go looking to find if someone has already done it. Just write it. And if they have, and you have no knowledge of it, then don't you have that plausible deniability? Well, as long as they can trace it back. But
the burden of proof is usually placed on the defendant. So if somebody says, this is similar to my work, you copied me, and they've got, you know, say they have it posted on fanfiction.net since 2011, you wrote your book in 2013,
mm-hmm.
The burden of proof is on you to prove that you haven't read that story.
I'm not a lawyer, and neither of us are.
No.
So I don't think any of this should be
taken. That would be where you talk to a literary lawyer and be like,
and this is why you can never, it's very hard to see copyright panels.
I'm not saying it's a cut and dry case, but what I am saying is that there is some degree of validity to their claim if they're going to try to sue you for co-authorship.
Like, none of us here agree with copying someone else's works.
Don't agree with suing somebody who has a slightly similar storyline.
I think it goes back to the saying that good writers create, great writers steal. It's very hard to create a complete 100% absolutely no influence story.
Well, and that's the thing, is if you say, I like writing horror, I also like reading horror, I read a lot of horror, it is hard for whatever I write to be completely... like separated from anything I've read through the entirety of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that brand of originality is incredibly overrated. There's no need to try and put out the next original thing.
And as Roland stated, when we sort of talked about this before the podcast, it's much like my story Killing Fields and its relation to the lottery. On the thinnest line, is it related?
Somebody was chosen and died.
Someone saw that relation, and suddenly my story was like the lottery. Well, no, it wasn't, but...
Oh, it's the same in that, you know, you'll write a story, and people will be like, I really love the symbolism of this object in your story. Ah, it's just brilliant. And you'll be like, oh, that's great.
You know,
and secretly you're like, I had no idea that was in there.
Actually, what this reminds me of is Coldplay... versus Joe Satriani, because they put out a song with the same chord progression, which is fucking everywhere, and Joe's going, these people copied me, even though the song, while similar, is different. And it's just, you can't worry about what's original and what's not. Just write it, so long as you're not plagiarizing someone else's work, you're fine.
Yeah, it's not a big thing to worry about. It happens to the best. But otherwise, yes. Dust off the hands.
Are books about writing helpful?
And are writing books helpful?
Yes. Now, I don't know about either of you. Have you written...
No, I actually haven't written any books about writing
before.
You
read any books about writing?
I've read books on things like punctuation and that.
I know you read
I just finished Eat Shoots and Leaves recently,
which I purchased.
It's fantastic, and I recommend it to anyone who's planning on writing or editing. Unless, because I don't know anyone who, other than maybe Ash, who has completely able to know every single word about punctuation.
I haven't read any books about writing. No.
No, neither have I. I'll admit it.
I've read a fair number, just because I'm kind of curious as to what they have to say.
What would you say is the difference between a writing article and a writing book? Or sorry, a writing an article about writing versus a book about writing?
I think it's just a matter of space and what they can put into it. Because
I've read plenty of articles.
Because like an article, because I get Poets and Writers, which is an American writing magazine. And there was one on writer's block, and though the two or three pages that they had were informative, they made reference of Around the Writer's Block, which is a book about writer's block, which I then went and picked up. And it's a huge book, but it's also significantly more helpful in explaining why, first of all, you do what you do in your normal life, and then how that transfers over to your writing and how you're self-sabotaging without realizing it and ways of solving it through using brain plasticity, which is a really scary concept. But yes, generally, I kind of recommend it. There's always going to be crap ones out there, but...
If there's something you're struggling with or would like to know, definitely recommend.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean... There's plenty of things for it.
What about writer retreats? Like, I know there's... Is it quite Clarity or something? There's that one where you go away for, I think, 6 weeks.
Well, and this is... There's two different ones for this. There's ones where you go to, like, say, a camp or something where you're with other writers. And then there's actual ones... Actual retreat. Yeah, and then there's ones where it's places that are set up for artists to go. Not specifically writers, but generally... And generally the remote... Generally, they're quiet, and you basically go there and you stay for a week, and it's basically
just this
converted farmhouse in the middle of the Nevada, in the middle of the wheat fields of some place.
Sounds like a perfect setting for your story.
Yeah. Nearest town is, you know, 10 kilometers away.
Still getting better.
Yeah.
I just see everyone leaves and they write this story about the exact same setting, but...
Suddenly, they're all writing horror.
But it's about just being in a group of writers, just immersed in your craft in a more solitude place,
kinda like
right?
Kind of like furries. You know, we get most furry when we're surrounded by other furs.
Oh, like at cons.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's when everyone comes out, right?
Right out of the woodwork and after dark.
Like, I've never been on one myself, but I imagine they would be just any time where you're in any such craft and just focusing on it for a week would be great.
Well, I think just being... Like, even if you just go to one of these places and you're just, like, as you're by yourself, you don't know anyone, but you're still sitting, you know, on the porch of this converted farmhouse, and there's six other writers that are in various places that you can see, just them working on their material inspires you to work on your material. I did 4 years of fine arts, and the time that I produced the most was when I was with other artists watching them produce.
Well, that's why, like, I miss our writing groups, because, you know, everyone else writing, you feel encouraged to write as well.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I miss it.
So what about things like virtual writing meets, like, Camp Nano and... Rhymonimo, yes.
I think the important thing about these writers' retreats is your ability to disconnect the internet.
Well, like, there is Camp Nano, where it's like Nano, except that... You're put into a cabin, quote-unquote, of 6 to 12 writers, and you don't have to have a 50K word goal. You can have 10K to 100K, and so it's a little more personal by the sounds of it and a little more set up on your own goals. So I think it's the closest you can have to a retreat because you're still being accountable. There are other writers around you.
I think you need to be surrounded physically with that.
I prefer to...
But a lot of us can't because of life.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right?
And unfortunately, that's one of the problems. And it's like, I mean, I would love to sit there and be like, I'm going to take off a week and go out into the mountains, set up a tent, and just write.
We could actually do that as a writing group. I know a lot of nice places with cabins up here in our mountains.
We would have to discuss it, but not this year.
Or next year.
So, the future.
Well, next year.
But do you think those are helpful?
I think it would be, because it's isolation from the internet. And its amazing ability to waste time. You're with like-minded people who are going to, at least if anything, hold you accountable. Because if you three are writing and I'm running around naked on the beach, I'm going to feel bad about...
I'm going to be focusing on my writing so I don't see that.
I'm not writing anymore at that point.
You're going to a place like that with purpose.
Exactly.
You wouldn't drive out to the middle of nowhere just so that you could do the exact opposite of what you intended.
And how shitty are you going to feel if you go out, for example, say to this refurbished farmhouse, you have spent $1,000-some-odd to rent out a room for a week, and you do diddly shit.
I'm going
to
check my Twitter.
Yeah.
It's a little like having your parents pay for your tuition and then paying for your own tuition.
To be fair, though, part of that is like the gym argument where, I bought a gym membership, which means I will now go because I put money into it. And then you go.
Well, except that you're actually going to the writing meet. So you're actually, it's like going to the gym
and not staying in the gym for a week.
Yeah, just standing there watching everyone else
going to the gym and then just being like, I'm just going to hang out by the vending machines.
Or just stand on the, like, just do the treadmill.
But there are people that do that. There's days where you go to the gym, you put on your stuff, and you're just like, I got to go do that. And then you leave.
I don't know. I wouldn't know anything about that, so I mean.
No, I kind of get creeped out about the people that go to the gym and do nothing but the treadmill. Like, they
you should write a story about that.
Why?
I don't know.
It's
taboo.
It's creepy.
Wouldn't that be taboo?
No.
So what about writing podcasts?
Writing podcasts. Weirdo. Are we helpful?
That's the exact point.
I mean,
you said weirdo.
Yes. Listen to us become better writers.
I would hope writing podcasts are
helpful. It's a two-step process.
Otherwise, what are we doing?
Now, way back when we drove down to RF, I downloaded a writing podcast episode on horror writing.
Did we even listen to that?
No, that one we did.
I think we just listened to that one really long story about the guy in the death pit with the pit bulls and the snake.
Yeah.
And
I was asleep, wasn't I?
The excessive use of swears.
It was horrible. But
I flew down.
Yeah, anyway. But I was listening to this one writing I've never listened to them before. It's run by one woman, and she does interviews, and she was interviewing this one author. And though not bad, I sure as hell didn't learn a thing about anything that they were talked about, except for a society that he headed and a little bit about it. But when it came down to writing, it was generally, what's your favorite horror films? Why do you like these horror films?
That's not right.
What are your favorite horror books? Oh, why do you like that style? But it's nothing really
writing oriented.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think the main point of, like, the main reason of why we created this particular podcast is that it doesn't read out, like, the introductory writing panel at your local fur convention. Because that's a lot of what those types of questions are. It's like, what's your favorite book? Or, you know, what do you like to have when you sit down to write? Like, completely inane questions that only have to do with the specifics of how that one person writes.
Yeah, it's just not going to do...
It doesn't do anyone else any good.
I think this is also a good point right here that with this podcast specifically, we've had other people ask questions like, oh, why can't you... You should tell us about what you're working on or tell us more about how you do this. This podcast specifically, we want to avoid that. We've seen that in almost any other writing podcast we've heard is... The authors like to talk about themselves because we're authors and we do that. But this podcast isn't about us. It's about the community and how we can all help each other. And that's why we're talking to you, is because we want to help you. And so we might do an episode one day on ourselves just for kicks. So
ultimately,
it might be a shit
our listeners get to hear about what we do through the parallels that we draw through giving advice. So... The need to talk about us specifically just isn't really there.
Yeah, if you guys actually want to know what projects we're personally on, reach out to us. I'm pretty sure we'd be fine.
We're all pretty easy to find.
Yeah, we have a Twitter. They're all public.
I built a platform for a reason.
We're on Facebook.
We talk enough on this podcast. We talk enough on this podcast. We don't want to waste your time listening to you talk. We don't want to have you listening to us talk about ourselves when we could be telling you about something that would help you.
More than we already have to.
The fact that I have anything meaningful to contribute to writers that people might not already know is kind of astounding.
I like that. That's a good take.
Well,
I guess we're done.
I'm not doing it.
It's a segue.
Not doing it.
Okay, which brings us to our next point.
Video games.
How to dust hands off.
Video games. Can they be inspirational or are they a time sink?
Time sink.
Both.
Really?
Video games can totally be inspirational.
I suppose the question is, why don't you think that video games can be an inspiration?
I think this side of the table is for, yay, they can be inspirational.
Well, like, I don't even play
and
video games
is
all that much.
No.
But I think that they're just as much an inspiration as other books or movies.
For me, I find generally, okay, MMOs, time sink.
Yes.
There's
agreed.
No end. And
that is the point of an MMO is to be a time sink.
Yeah.
So that aside, and things like Minesweeper, Solitaire, blah, 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 blah.
I've studied games, and those also specifically, I can't remember the exact name for them, but they are designed to spend your time. That is the point of Solitaire and Minesweeper.
Okay.
Is specifically because I have nothing else to do and I want to waste an hour.
Let's say we're talking about things like Final Fantasy, Wild Arms.
Yeah. Now, having just played through the first Mass Effect
one
and a half times, back to back,
literally
until my Xbox died. And literally looking at it going, and it's highly inspirational, and there's a lot of elements in there that I sat there and was like, well, how did they do this? From Mass Effect, it's just there's certain elements in it with the storyline that, and the way they draw certain things together that, and their character interactions that I can see mimicked in stories that I'm reading, and there's changing certain elements in my head. So I'm not saying that all video games are a time sink. I think they can be depending on the game. But I can also easily see people who are like, I'm going to write today after I do some Mass Effect, and 3 hours later you've lost it.
See, I see that just as bad time management, though.
Well,
it
is time.
If you're just going to get lost in a video game, it's not the video game's fault, it's yours.
It's time management / writer's
block. Same that I can go watch a movie, it's just easier to escape because the movie will end.
Yeah.
Much shorter.
I think it's safe to assume that I'm not trying to draw inspiration from my story by playing Solitaire.
Yeah.
And some games do tend to lend themselves better to being able to stop, you know, once in a while. There are some games that just, namely the ones with save points, that just don't allow you to stop until like an hour and a half after you've started.
Such point. Okay, sorry. Mark.
I guess it wasn't much of a point, but yeah, I'm done.
Mark. Like myself, I even specifically state this, but most of the games on my wall there have strong narratives, or at least the ones I enjoy playing most of the time, have strong narratives. In the same sense that even you yourself, Tarl, have...
I'm trying to find a game that doesn't have a strong storyline.
Plants vs. Zombies. There you go.
Okay. Very nice.
Grand Theft Auto could be debatable, but
not the way I play it.
No, but that's the thing. If you want to play the story, but Mark, in the same way that Tarl, you yourself have commented, like, "Oh, I'm going to get into cyberpunk," so you went and watched a bunch of cyberpunk shows. So you're watching a medium. You're engorging in a medium that is not writing because it's still going to have the same set of tropes and types, and it's still going to have intriguing narrative. Hopefully, it's just. I can understand video games being a little more risky because they are more immersive. That's one of the big strong points of video games, is they're made to be immersive if they're done correctly, and they're longer.
Nope, you're absolutely correct.
Off my soapbox.
Well, funny thing is that speaking of your game shelf, I see one game up there that would be a great inspiration for anyone looking to create sort of like a gritty noir story.
Is it that one that has noir on it?
Yeah. It
Fallout 3, right? Fallout 3.
So, I mean, like, there are plenty of games that introduce a good immersive storyline, one that you would probably, you know, have no problem wanting to emulate. So, you know, if I decide to play L.A. Noire, or, you know, Ocean on countless times has used the soundtrack from L.A. Noire to sort of push writing in a certain direction, and that's completely valid.
Now, I'm going to point out here, because I've wanted to mention this a number of times. If, while one of us are talking, usually Roland or myself, and you hear Ocean or Yan laughing in the background, it's because what you can't see is that they're usually flashing hand signs or something back and forth that really distracts the shit out of Roland or myself. So if we sound really dumb when we're talking, it's because they're doing that. And we're trying to ignore them while at the same point getting our attention stolen away from actually talking and staring at them.
Yep, it's totally their fault.
I have wanted to mention this for friggin' like 6 episodes.
Because you've never done that at all.
Today I did. That's why I gave the shocker.
No, I mean... Yeah. Back on time.
Yes.
Funny enough, Mass Effect, I couldn't get into Mass Effect because it was too heavy into the dialogue that it wasn't pushing me out of the narrative. That I'm just like, okay, I get it. You're talking. You're still talking. You're still talking.
Yeah.
You're
and still talking.
Can I shoot a gun now? Okay.
However, sort of his scary game that stuck with me for friggin' forever,
game?
The Rain one.
Oh, Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain's fantastic.
Yeah, God, no, that was great.
Oh.
I mean, it really was just Push X the video game, but that was they used that.
Push X the video game.
No, it's press X to do horrible things.
Yeah, like, no, it's, that's the thing.
It's I like, saw one X. segment of it. Of Roland playing, and it will forever. And like,
what
I'm the horror guy, the freaking doctor.
Oh,
with
yeah.
And it was like, I'm sitting there going, like, I'm like, as the horror
you
writer, play,
you're
I'm,
watching.
I was ever. Watching him.
Imagine how much better it is when you're playing, you're like, fuck,
no, as
I'm gonna
like,
get no access circuit.
In the scenes where it's like, save your son by chopping off your fingers, and it's like,
see, okay. I wasn't gonna say that because that's a spoiler, but
okay, well,
it's like.
We can add a spoiler warning or something, but like, it's like,
spoilers.
Push X and then like positions the blade. It's like, okay, now hold X and push square. And then you're like, yeah, you're breathing harder. And it's like, okay,
this is me. I'm playing. I'm just like, I don't want to do this.
Like, yeah.
And then it's
like
okay, shake
push,
the controller
oh.
to stab your finger. And you're like, and you're like, ow. And he does it. And you're like, no, it didn't go through. Do it again. And you're like, no.
That
is what I call fantastic narrative in a video game and immersion.
Yeah, it's a beautiful example of how you can use a game to tell a story.
Every single time you had to do another trial,
I
had to sit there for 5 minutes going, what am I going to have to do this time? What am I going to have to do for my son?
Or just for all of the stuff that they're putting you through, the fact that they make damn sure you know what you're doing.
And if anyone says that video games do not have good stories, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
no.
Throw
well,
that in
it
your
all depends
face.
On what kind of genre
you know,
you're talking about.
If it's Call of Duty,
Call of Modern Warfare.
Yeah, because they're killing
Field
people
3,
in it and dismemberment.
The Quakening.
Just read the back
so,
reason.
So what about movies?
You should borrow it. Anyways, movies,
as you said, have an end. So there's always going to be an end when you plop it on.
I think we're already arguing for video games, and so anything else is pretty...
As far as movies go, I mean, they're just as open for drawing inspiration as any other story. And movies are specifically a story, so the line's a little more clearer on that one.
That's true. Well... Mm.
What was it? Yeah, okay, yeah.
Are we talking about the next point? So, despite the fact that we said we won't talk about ourselves, we're going to talk about ourselves, as in the most common read genres of each member of our little group.
Well, because it also goes into this other part of, is there genres we feel that we can't do for any reason?
That is true. Now, for anyone who reads my reviews, I tend to read a lot of horror. I also read a lot of science fiction. With a tint of fantasy.
Tint.
A sprinkle on top, a sprinkle of pixie dust.
The sugar on the cupcake that is filled with darkness and turmoil.
Once
and
every get once past in, the unspeakable horror, it's not so bad.
And every once in a while, I'll read a YA, a young adult book, because there's something to be said for the young adult.
Paris Anthony's a young adult. He's amazing.
Well, no, it's just there's something palate cleansing about it. But at the same point, in reading a young adult, there, you're not going to see overt, like, a lot of sex, if sex at all. You're not going to see a lot of violence. You're not going to see a lot of the hyper-violence that you see in a lot of horror and things like that.
They have to rely on plot to grab your attention.
It sort of harkens back to a time when the stories weren't just all about death and decay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, no, palate cleansing is a good term for that.
But there's also really good ones that are out there. And especially in the case of, like, say, the paranormal / urban fantasy genre, here's a genre where the young adult works well because you're not dealing with all the friggin' sex and romance that gets usually thrown into it in the more adult aspect books of it. Anyway, anyone else?
And add the second part of that question. What is the one type of story genre you feel you can't write, and possibly not because of disinterest, but more about feeling it doesn't fit your writing abilities?
Slice of life. I find slice of life to be extremely difficult to do, especially realistically. My problem is that if anyone who's read my work, I tend to go very dark very quickly, and unfortunately, realistic slice of life...
There's that hand motion.
Yeah. Ocean's scratching his chin.
I go, oh, really?
Yeah.
I actually have chin fluff to stroke while
Tunnel
speaks.
I'm sure Roland can relate to this, but there's just maybe it's stuff that I've been through in my own life, but writing a slice of life thing, the first place I'm going to go when a situation naturally occurs in a slice of life thing is bad. And no one wants to read a slice of life piece where the main character is constantly like hit with these negative events in their life. Because by the end of it, the guy's just going to commit suicide or kill somebody. And
sure, his girlfriend won't kill him?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
And no one, most people don't want to read that. Unless there's some kind of happy ending to it or whatever. Like,
yeah, you don't do happy endings.
No. Exactly. And it's just, and that's the thing, is I find it really hard to sit there and write a slice of life thing where it's, these are normal trials and tribulations that a normal person would go through and not immediately take it to the darkest place possible. You know, that stranger in the club is there to talk to you and maybe...
So you find slice of life a little bit too...
tame?
Happier? Or it's because you can't... Well,
yeah, see, the, I think
no,
it's,
no, that's,
it's,
that's the
irony is that I find like, the what I tend to write is a little more slice of life because life honestly doesn't usually go as planned.
Well, and that's the thing is, I think...
That's usually... If you don't, then the slice of life gets really boring, doesn't it?
The slice of life that I'm thinking about is more... Like, you do some very good stuff that hints on the slice of life, and you do take it that slightly darker route. The slice of life that I can't write is that one where it's like, this is this person's life. This is their, you know, this is this, you know, husband-wife team that are having their marital issues, and the entire novel's about them struggling through it to save the kids or some stupid thing.
Rather than
this is... how it all explodes.
There's sort of a point where certain stories become too real to really adequately describe in print.
Yeah. Who wants to go next?
Okay. Let me see. I mostly read... I read old stuff. Like, I can't remember the... Other than Eat, Shoots, and Leaves and a few various furry stories, what the newest book I've actually read. Like, I love the classics, you know, like I just recently finished 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. What I'm taking with me to Mexico is The Maltese Falcon. You know, I still have near the top of my writing pile is 1984 and Picture of Dorian Gray. I think you guys can back me up or tell me I'm wrong, but I think my writing style seems to reflect that.
A little, yeah.
I like my paragraphs separate from my dialogue and my action. And I like action-y. I'm not huge into fantasy. Fantasy is for some reason one of the ones I just can't seem to write. I don't know why. I'm still trying to figure that out. Just magic doesn't work well with me for some reason. I'd rather do futuristic techno stuff. Horror I can't write just because I don't do horror. I don't absorb that culture. I don't watch that or immerse myself in that media. So I just can't evaluate or write it. And then slice of life is one I want to work on. But like usually the conflicts I want to deal with are something more otherworldly than mm-hmm. normal life. But I want to get more into that genre.
Mm. Slice of life is a good genre.
It's hard to write something that is really, truly real in that sense without making it seem like terribly awkward. So it's a legitimately hard sort of genre to get into to write.
I think I also have a trouble dealing with characters, and characters is the huge part of a slice of life. It's very character driven, I find. But that's me.
So as for genres, I find myself reading usually fantasy or science fiction. I don't like real life when I'm reading. I just like to be able to lose myself in whatever settings that somebody else has put forth for me. As for what I find I have the most trouble writing, I mean, I know it's not really a genre, but anything really heavily action, mostly just because the progressions that I go through when I think about what an action scene should be like aren't paced correctly. It's very hard to fine-tune what exactly these characters are supposed to be doing over, you know, maybe two or three pages of description in a span that's only happening in about 10 to 15 seconds. I think I'm decently good at mostly everything else. Like, I don't do a lot of horror, but I think of my story for Abandoned Places as any indication.
Yeah.
It's at least not a weak point.
No, very true.
Well, as for myself, I read a crap ton of fantasy, urban fantasy, science fiction, fiction, and horror science fiction or horror fantasy crossover. I'm no stranger to the horror and the gore. I mean, just yesterday I was reading a book where they were basically slaughtering the human servant of a vampire, and it got down to the point where they were having a hard time pulling the heart out of the chest because they didn't have the tools to crack the sternum, so they're going through the gut cavity. And all I could think of was the last time I butchered a deer. It was like, yeah, no, I remember how tough the sternum is. So I don't know, I guess it's just a case of it doesn't faze me, so I can write it, as it's proving, because I thought I couldn't write it, but then I realized I read so much of it, why not? Got published in it, and then I thought, okay, well, I can't do the sad ending stuff. Well, okay, I did that. I kind of thought I'd be like the more happy ending writer, because that's what I really prefer to read. I mean, if I find out that one of my favorite characters dies in a series or a book or something, I'm done with it. Point in case, you know, the Bitten series on TV. They killed one of my favorite characters.
I was already sick of Death Note, but halfway through Death Note, I'm like, yep, done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they killed one of my favorite characters in Bitten on the TV series, and it was like,
nope.
Done. Nope. They killed Antonio.
That's why they're always scared to kill people up, because if you're attached to that person, then you've lost so much interest.
Yeah, exactly. But...
this may sound a little morbid, but like those are almost the points that I look forward to.
See, and not me.
I
agree.
And it's why I write like that a lot in the way that I do, is that I feel that killing off the...
You just like
maybe not even killing off, but like...
You're trying to be the Josh Whedon of authors. Yes, you like this character?
I wish. I would so love to be the Joss Whedon.
Like it's kind of
clearly make money.
Yeah, it's kind exactly. of like how any strong reaction you get out of your readers is a good reaction, and I feel that translates quite well. So I mean, maybe some people will put down a book if their favorite character dies, but ultimately some of my favorite books have had the greatest emotional impact, like books where I've closed them, put them down, and come back to it tomorrow.
Heart-Shaped Box was one of those books for me about a haunting, and it was, yeah.
So, yeah, what can't you write?
Noir. Mm. Detective. Ooh. Action. Mm. I hate just... Yeah, I guess anything that requires a lot of mystery and the adventure part I have a difficult time with. I think it's just because I can't think in the scene by scene by moment that action requires. And I'm just not sneaky enough of a bastard to write a proper mystery.
Mystery's stupidly hard to do right, I find.
It is, because you have to be thinking six steps ahead to write step two, and if anyone's ever played a game of checkers with me, sod it, I can't do it. Forget even bringing the chessboard out, I'll probably just chew on the pieces.
I've heard some Discovery writers just say, I don't know who's going to do it, and they leave clues that could tie to anyone, and then they get to maybe 80% of the story, they're like, this guy will be it, and then they just write it.
I don't know. I think I did that with one of my... Shit, which story did I do that with? Was it The Black Spot?
Maybe.
No, The Black Spot was Pirates.
Black Spot wasn't a mystery.
No, I did that recently with something, and I either way, it was literally a case of as I'm writing this, I had no idea who was going to be the bad.
And then you figure it out.
And yeah. I'm like, I'm going to do this now!
Yeah, funny thing about that is, like, that would... Because I've talked with you about what I think makes, like, a good mystery, a good detective story, and I always feel that these stories should have some degree of, like, some logical connection up to the point where they find out who done it. Or if there's not a logical connection, that it's not simply by omission of facts. Mm-hmm. So for somebody to go, here's a clue, here's a clue, here's a clue, here's a clue, and then go, well, it's this guy. That would probably bug the shit out of me.
Probably.
Even though I probably wouldn't do any better.
Oh, the other thing I read is comics.
I love comic books!
And that's honestly where I get really a lot of my background in dark is. But I will consider it a genre. It's a graphic novel, but there is definitely a different style of writing to it.
So many kinds.
This looks
like
you're like doing a cult thing.
we're just waiting to end this topic.
Okay. Topic the cult end. Of we're done.
Dead horse.
Okay. Another day.
Last topic of the evening.
Do we read stories on So Furry, Weasel, and F.A.?
I do not.
I read one specific author on F.A., as I mentioned before, Dragon Talon. I started reading his erotica because it was dirty and I enjoyed it, and then he did a whole bunch of world building, and now I read it because I like the world he's built.
Why
and
do
I
you
find
not?
Myself skimming over the porn to get to the plot.
I don't, because I can't stand the format.
Oh, the format. Have you tried Weasel?
It's, no matter what, it's just...
Weasel, I found, is actually a little bit more readable.
This is going to sound really weird. I don't like the effort it takes for me to log on to, say, So Furry, find a piece to read, and then read it on my computer screen. I would rather go to a bookstore and purchase a hard copy book. In my mind, that is easier than going on to, say, SF, FA, whatever, and finding a story. Unfortunately, it's just, I mean, yes, I can search certain keywords, but usually people won't write a half-decent blurb about their story. I will find more of a definition about their story on, say, Smashwords. There's not enough description of what the story is about on any of the, like, FA, So Furry, whatever, as compared to just finding a book on Smashwords, finding a book on online, or going and reading the back of a novel at Chapters.
See, I will read stories off of those places, but generally it's I'm at work and I want to just read something quick, and that's where it comes from. If I have time, I'm usually reading, you know, something published. Not to say that those aren't published, but it's just something easier if I want to quickly read something on my phone or a teaser to a book or something. And there's enough people that are like, hey, you should check this out. And so I'm like, oh, good. Well, now I have something to read if I suddenly need something to read.
Yeah, I don't make a point of avoiding submissions on these sites but I won't go out. I won't seek them out. I mean, it's mostly just because I have so many other things to read instead of looking for quality content on Ink Bunny or Zofuri or whatever.
That's actually a good point.
Yeah, the quality level.
Well, it's like I'm usually reading 10 novels at once.
Like,
so,
and when it comes to what we do, we already spend so much of our time reading the slush pile that I can't find it in me to go to FA and
do it again.
Oh yeah, like I've never actually gone and just I'm going to find a story. It's, oh, here's a list of stories of people I know that have written something and I haven't read it, or someone recommended this and then I'll read
it. Well, and that's the thing is, like, if someone sits there and goes, you should check out my stuff on, say, FA, I'll go and I'll look at their gallery and it's like title, 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 and I'm like, you know what? Unless you're one of those smart people who put in their avatar for it, this is the themes within. I love
that.
Yeah.
They put things in?
Like basically it's...
Their submission file is like...
So say it's...
Like the avatar?
Action, horror, adventure,
horror, action.
Oh.
Noir, detective.
It's just like an upload, a thumbnail that gives a brief description of what it is. I've seen it a couple times.
Very few people do it, and I wish more would. Because
Jeeves Rue does it.
If you're looking for something specific, there it is. At a glance, you know, and it's just
there's
like
a suggestion for the developers.
Well, exactly.
Something, because, yeah, otherwise you just see a blank icon that, if they're nice enough, maybe it says the title in it, or it says it's a story.
I always made a habit of putting the keywords on the actual icon itself. Mm-hmm. It helped people actually know what it was.
And it does help.
Yeah. The other thing about reading stuff on Zofuri, FA, whatever, I am typically only going to be aware of the people that are already published.
Yeah.
People like Kyle Gold, Mary Loud, whoever else.
Voice Spider,
Roland Ferret, Ocean Tigrox, Yanara Cheetah.
China. It's not Cheetah. China? It's China.
Oh, I heard Cheetah before.
It's very easy to get mixed up.
Yeah. It's an end.
Y'all sound the same.
Y'all sound the same to me, Shug.
But like these people are already published, and usually that's going to be why I know of their FA, etc. So it's kind of a moot point for me.
Well, yeah, like I'll see a published author going, oh, I put this up on my FA. It's an old story that was in an anthology, and now the Statute of Limitations is up. Or here's a teaser to my story in an anthology, and you'll be like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't think I've found myself going, I want to find a story, spin the wheel of FA and play.
I used to read quite a bit off of FA and Zofuri, and back when it was Yiffstar.
My reading pile is just too big for that.
Yeah, and it's just...
There it is. Well,
I don't have time. Yeah, we're
done. Yeah, there we go. Okay. I think that's enough for now.
Well, let us know what you thought of our grab bag discussion.
It's a paper bag, really.
I'm just disappointed that, you know, I can't really do much for the outro because they were all visual jokes that just broke out into laughter.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, a lady that works is just as well in on it.
That's okay. You still
Who
have the stuff.
Who are you?
Hello, welcome to Pinkie Pie, Master Tornado of the Universe.
But yes, please contact us. Check out our website, fangsandfonts.com. Please send us suggestions, complaints, comments, and anything else you'd like to tell us. Topics you want to hear, guests you'd like on, just email us at podcast@fangsandfonts.com or feel free to Twitter us at @fangsandfonts.
Check out our Facebook.
Yes, we have Facebook.
We have Facebook.
Fangs and Fonts.
I've been trying to do stuff to it.
Otherwise, right now we're all reading Summerhill so that we can review it end of April, beginning of May.
But we're all on vacation now, so.
Which is why we're a perfect time to read it.
Exactly.
So if you haven't read it, we encourage you to.
One of us has actually started reading it.
Not it!
Only one? You haven't started?
I'm halfway through.
Oh. But now you interrupted my thought. Yeah, if you haven't read it before, pick it up and read it along with us, and then we can all comment and review it together. Yeah, that's it for me. That for you guys?
That's it for me. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Thanks much.
We appreciate everything you do for us. Have a good night.
Good night.
wait so long.
Farewell.
Marionettes creep you out. Have you done a story with marionettes? It's about time you did.
I already
have to string some above the bed before he wakes up now.